Hey, welcome to the podcast. This is Why We Create. Thanks for being here, everyone.
Why We Create is a podcast that explores the behind-the-scenes stories from artists, inventors, and the daringly creative.
Today, we are talking about one of my favorite things, video games. But we are talking less about what we are playing and more about what we are making. The Portland Indie Game Squad, or Pig Squad, is a group of folks that is all about making games. Will Lewis and Marlo Doby are here to explain what Pig Squad is all about, how you can participate, and why they love video games. Let's get into it.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us again. We are back. It's the official Welcome Podcast, Why We Create. My name is Megan, and I am joined, as always, by my dear friend and co-host, Christopher.
That's me. My name is Christopher, and this is my voice.
I'm actually super excited for this. This is fully unscripted. So for those of you that have been listening to all three seasons of Why We Create, you could probably surmise that the Welcome Experience Center in Portland was opened in 2016, back in the days of yore. There's been a few organizations and groups, creative tech developer groups, throughout the years that we have had the privilege of working with, had the honor of working with, and are like some of the most joyful groups of people to work with, one of which being Pig Squad and Rose City Games. So I don't even remember our first event together, but I feel like the first event was just a slingshot catapult into us doing at least, I feel, 2 to 3 events every single month. So Pig Squad, for those that don't know, stands for the Portland Indie Game Squad, also then led into Rose City Games. And we, of course, are joined by a founder and one of the artists and members, Will Lewis and Marlo Dobbs. Thank you for joining us today. I'm super excited.
Hello.
While we are speaking with the president and founders and active members of Pig Squad, there is no hog tying, but there will be a rootin' tootin' good time. I'm so sorry, Christopher. I had to get it in. Yeah, I just had to clarify, just to like
we're gonna set the scene. We're gonna hoof it right in, though.
Yes,
we don't have time for these things.
Thank you. I'm trying to remember our first event, Will, and I don't even know if I can remember because I feel like we've done hundreds since then.
It's been a while.
I feel like I would have to get my old phone out and look at photos.
Yeah.
Is it a flip phone?
No.
It might have been.
Rotary.
Did you have a flip phone in 2016? Yeah. Christopher, is my question.
Maybe he did. No, it's been forever. And there's not too many folks, especially living through COVID, that we've worked with for these past 7 years. And you guys are definitely like the top of the list. I know every year when we go through and like outline who we're doing stuff with, it's always Pig Squad is right at the top. And I'm just excited to like dig into the Pig Squad story with y'all. So thanks for joining us. This is special.
Thank you for having us. As always.
As always. See y'all on Friday. True story.
I don't know. Whenever it's like a Pig Squad week, we host you guys, like Megan was saying, like all the time. I just know it's going to be a good week and it's like easy for
always.
Us. I'm like, yeah, these guys are going to come in. It's going to be a rad event and it's going to be like about video games. And that's great.
Yeah. What more do you need?
Yeah. What more do we need? So we always start off the podcast with this question is like, in your own words, who are you guys and what do you do?
My name is Marlo. I am an artist, an animator, an art director for video games in my day job. I'm currently working with Megacrit Games, which is a studio in Seattle, but I'm based here in Portland.
Fabulous.
And in my free time, I am an officer for the Portland Indie Game Squad. So in my free time, I'm also doing video game stuff and helping facilitate people make games together, participating as much as I can on my own, making my own little side projects. And yeah, it's kind of what I'm about.
Yeah. And I'm Will Lewis. I'm the president and founder of the Portland Indie Game Squad. It's a 501c3 nonprofit, became that way after time. And I am also a co-founder of Rose City Games. So Rose City Games is a game studio based in Portland. Such as Floppy Nights and The World Next Door, but we also published Garden Story and are working on multiple projects right now. And I also do lots of other things. I participate in the Pig Squad game jams. I think it's kind of important maybe to give a background of ourselves, to maybe talk a little bit about what games we're playing right now.
My first question was, how far are you in Tears of the Kingdom? So she's
practically 100% of it. She has all the hearts. She wasted that big bad dude.
I'm saving some of it though, because I know there's going to be DLC. So like the side quests, I'm like, I'm saving a couple of those so I can get back and, you know, mess around, which is what that game is all about.
And I fell off of it a little bit around the time that she's beating it. My number one goal, like on our list right now, is for me to finish it so that we can talk about the ending.
I've been hounding him,
but I haven't played it for a while. I think Dave the Diver is what interrupted me.
Yeah. Dave the Diver looks so good.
It's pretty fun. It just really came out of nowhere. Korean, I believe it's a Korean made game where you're like, you know, diving, getting fish, and then turning them in at your sushi restaurant and managing that. And then there's
but you
like
also
massive
punch a shark, like.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And then there's like boss fight. There's like every single feature you could think of is just crammed into this game. And there's a big long story, and it's pretty fun.
Dave the Diver is news to me.
I believe it's just PC, on Steam, right? But I'm not sure.
I think it's getting a Switch port soon.
Ooh, nice. Okay. I'm going to have to seek this out.
We'll see how the Switch handles it, but that would be a very cool thing. And we're also playing Advance Wars right now.
Yeah, playing the Advance Wars port on Switch, which is basically all I've ever done my whole life is play Advance Wars.
Yeah, trading off levels. Good. When I had like a long hospital stay a long time ago, I got a bunch of games to prep up for it. And then I just played Advance Wars 3 again. So that's all we do is play Advance Wars in this house.
Cool.
Before we met each other and after we met
each other. Yeah.
It's the glue that holds you together.
Exactly.
That's right.
I love that.
The bullets, that. The tanks, the medium tanks.
So how did Pig Squad kind of come to be? Like, what is the origin story of Pig Squad?
Yeah, I mean, so it started with me in 2010 abouts. I really wanted to make video games my whole life. I have lots of sketchbooks of weird characters from when I was like 3. I still have those. I have like JRPG plans from when I was in like 7th grade, all fully mapped out and just, you know, all that kind of thing. I have like Kirby and Donkey Kong levels drawn up from, I think Kirby's Adventure was like my first game. So I'm trying to think about.
We're dating ourselves.
Yeah, we're dating ourselves. Whoops.
You're in good company.
But I was 1 year old though. So
yeah, he was an infant, just very.
Yeah,
right. Rolled out of the crib onto a Game Boy.
Some great prenatal Kirby. but
name of the episode right there.
Yeah. Oh, really? Draw him in. And so I'd always wanted to make games. I was always having a very, very hard time learning how to program. I knew how to do a lot of art stuff in games and was able to self-teach myself and have already been interested in animation forever, even before being interested in video games. So I kind of went to school for film just because it was the next best thing. There weren't a lot of schools in the Portland area and kind of still aren't surrounding video game development. And formed a lot of kind of community connections and formed a community group around film when I was going to college. And then once I kind of moved kind of past that kind of thing, it was something I wanted to do, but then thought, hey, why can't I do the same thing for video games? Like there's probably other people who want help in similar ways. Let's just start this thing. I know how to get people together. So I just started, you know, gathering some friends and other people, posting on Reddit, posting on Facebook at the time, all those kinds of things. And then eventually what started out as like 8 people in a classroom hanging out and just talking about what they wanted to do next monthly is now, outside of the pandemic is, you know, 40 to 90 people come out 3 times monthly. We have larger events. We have smaller events. We do game jams. Currently, during the pandemic, a lot of that just kind of takes place online, where instead of meeting up in person, a lot of the things we'll do include like Discord hangouts where we screen share and co-work. We'll still do game jams remotely. People can still meet up online to talk about progress for their games and contribute to each other's stuff. But now we are also in a phase of transitioning back into in-person. So that's kind of like the gist of it. With regard to, I mean, I think it's maybe relevant to ask Christopher, like what projects we might be most known for, because I would probably say I am probably most known for Pig Squad. Mm-hmm. And I know that you probably would say Dicey Dungeons.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah.
I can speak a little bit to like how I got into Pig Squad too, because it's kind of like,
that was my next question.
I think my experience is a very common experience of like getting into Pig Squad where I, similarly to Will, like I've grown up playing video games my whole life and always wanted to make them, but like I had this idea in my head for such a long time that like, oh, I'm an artist. I don't make video games. Like I just draw stuff. And it took me until my last year of college to realize that that wasn't necessarily accurate way to approach it. And so for my senior year project, my thesis, I did a video game concept. And when I was doing my defense, my panel had mentioned Pig Squad and they're like, you should check this out. It's like a local community. And I went in knowing nothing about Pig Squad. And I was actually quite nervous going to my first event because this was like 2015. And this was when like Gamergate was a big thing. Sure. And those who know about Gamergate know about that. That's a whole other topic. But it was kind of scary to get into the game scene at the time. But I went on their website. They had a great code of conduct. I went to my first event and it was kind of like, open the floodgates of me being able to say like, oh man, there's a ton of different people making video games of different skill sets and meeting new people. And for the first time, really meeting people that like to do what I wanted to do. And it was just a snowball of, I went to every event. I started coming early and helping out. I started staying late and stacking chairs. And then I became a volunteer. And like, now I'm an officer. So it just sucked me in. And it was a really big reason why I'm working full-time in games right now is because like working on game jams and meeting people really gave me the confidence to kind of get out there and work on projects like Dicey Dungeons and just kind of helped me with my trajectory a lot.
I love that. I think of all of the groups we work with, and I do internally at my job at Wacom, I reference Pig Squad all the time because you guys have one of the tightest communities. And I think for being so diverse within gaming, and we'll dig into like the different components of what it takes to make a game, because there's a lot of different jobs and functions within that. But your guys's community is so tight. And I think for those exact reasons, Marlo was like, people, A, there's no gatekeeping. And I think for a lot of industries, you have this feeling of like, I don't know enough about video games. Am I going to be welcome here? Which for Pig Squad, 100% not true. Come in, like, be honest, be nice, be who you are. And there is always a space for you. But it is, it's so great to see that. And it's cool because I think like you, Marlo, so many people do get their next opportunities by joining in Pig Squad. I have a question for you as an artist. I think a lot of industries that do rely heavily on artists, designers, that people often think like, you don't think about how those things are made. Comic books, footwear, clothing, video games. Was there a video game that you saw, or what was that moment in your career as an artist in college where you were like, oh no, I could create art for video games? Was there like a video game that inspired you, or someone being like, no, these take very skilled artists?
Yeah, I think it wasn't necessarily like a single video game. That was a time where there were a lot of like, it was a bit of an indie gold mine where there were a lot of small creators making games. And I was aware of that. But I think the thing that really spurred me into I can do this was actually the Feminist Frequency series, Tropes versus Women in Video Games.
Nice.
And watching that was like a big like, oh, not only can I do it, but I should be doing it. Like having more diverse voices in games has always been like a really big inspiration and something that I, you know, want to try and, or I hope that Pig Squad can help do is like get more people who might be a little scared of the gatekeeping vibe that the industry tends to have.
Sure.
And like push them beyond that to say like, not only can you do this, but it's like, we want you to do this. Like, it's important that you do this. Yeah. And I think video games are a really powerful medium for like expression and storytelling. And the more that people get to access that, the better. So that was a big inspiration for me to get into it.
I love that.
Super well said. Yeah. Just to echo what you said earlier about like walking into Pig Squad and just not knowing like really anything about games. my first game jam with you guys was actually for the Global Game Jam this past year. And I just, like you, walked in like not really knowing anything and got on a team and learned a lot, but it was super fun and super welcoming. And everyone was like, okay, yeah, you know nothing, great. You're on this team. We're going to make a game. And we
get
did.
Get in here.
Yeah. Yeah. And we made a game in like, I don't know, 5 days or something like that. And I was just blown away by, well, how much we got done, one, but just like the community is amazing. Mm-hmm. And watching you guys play my game, I was like, my eyes were glued to the screen. I was like, I am so excited. it was super fun.
There really is something really powerful about like being able to make something and watch somebody else like play it and experience it live. Like, yeah, that's such a huge draw too, just like showcasing and everything like that.
To kind of like rewind and kind of just like build a base for anybody who's listening to this and has zero clue like what game jam means. Yeah.
Yes,
or like
that is our next question. Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys are good at this.
Yeah. who has also never thought about making games before. I mean, just to kind of give an idea of what it like looks like to like come to a PixSwat event. Like, just for example, like one of our staples is just kind of like a social, like an art code night is what we call them, where people come out and they just like co-work. They bring their laptops and they say just like, oh yeah, I'm gonna write some code, or I'm going to draw on my iPad, or I'm going to bring my laptop and I'm going to write a plan or write a story for games. You know, I'm gonna bring my stuff out that I'm working on. But a lot of people also bring out games that are that they have made or want feedback on, and they say, hey, can anybody like play this and check it out and give me some feedback? Or, some people walk around and just say, hey, like, what are you working on? And just kind of like get introduced to what is going on. And I think that's typically what I recommend to people, is just like come out to something at least once a month and just like try to remember someone's name. And eventually you just start making games with each other. And game jams are those, you know, short-term like game-making challenges where you walk in, as Christopher said, you walk in, you say, oh God, I want to try to do something specific, but I don't know what's going to happen. I'm just going to talk to people and see if we can make a team together. And then everybody commits to, you know, making a game over. Sometimes it's 48 hours, sometimes it's 2 weeks to just say like, yep, I want to get together with these people, small team of like five people, and say, you know, I've never done anything before. I just want to be included in the forum that everybody has, or the email chain that everybody has, to talk about what everybody's working on. And I want to kind of shadow that. Or you come in and you say, I know how to draw and I know how to make characters, like, I'm going to find a team and just be like, hey, can I try this? And then, you know, somebody on your team says, oh, well, can you make backgrounds too? And then you're just like, I'll give it a shot. We have a game to make in 6 days. So you just try it out. And and that's kind of like what that flow looks like. And it can be, as Christopher's tone implies at the beginning of that, it's just like, yeah, it might start like a little, feel a little nervous, or feel a little bit uncomfortable, but it really is kind of like a wonderful use case in just like approaching something with discomfort and then coming out with confidence at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can do anything for a team, and it helps tremendously. What I'm realizing is something that I realized what we needed on our team that we didn't have is just someone to check in with everyone on the team.
Yeah.
And just say like, hey, how are you? Like, what have you gotten done today? Like, what's your plan for the day? And then communicate that with the rest of the team. Like a project manager.
Exactly.
And I was like, I didn't realize how big a project manager for games was until the game jam. And I was like, this is so crucial. And all we need is someone to send emails.
Yeah.
And then, it's also interesting with that, just how much you learn, not even just like the concept of that being useful, but like, you read like a social media post about somebody saying, I'm a project manager in the industry and these are the things I've learned. And then you're like, man, even though I haven't heard of it, like I haven't been a part of any of this, I can now relate to that. And it's just like, it's just the beginning of that confidence of being able to make something that you really want to make, like be creative in any which way, because also games are such a wide medium that involves so many skill sets. You can take on one, you can take on many, you can take on the sort of soft skill role, such as project management or any of those kinds of things, and feel pretty rewarded that a product comes out the other end. It's really, really cool.
This leans into a question that I had. We just listed off a handful of roles and kind of jobs within a game jam team. And I would think this also that extends to actually a gaming company community outside of like, I'm a game developer, I can program, because I think that's always the first space people go to. What are some of the most underrated positions within like a game jam team or like a game developer team?
Well, I think that obviously project manager or producer is a huge one. You know, UI designer, like UI and UX. Sometimes
we do love ourselves a UI designer.
Sometimes, you know, if I'm like the artist on the team and I'm the only artist, I'll have to take that on.
Sure.
But it's always great if you find, like, I do not know why people like doing UI design, but there's people out there that like to do it. And God bless them.
It takes all types.
Like that. You are blessed.
But for the layman, that's stuff like the buttons on screen and the health bar and the menus and like all that kind of stuff.
It's a specific, it's a very specific, it's organized design, and you have to be thoughtful. And like, think about every game we've played that you're like, where do I find this? Like digging through a menu to try to find my maps or my toolkit.
When
or
you
like,
have bad UI, you notice it. Yeah. It's really crucial, and it can really ruin a lot of games.
Sure.
Your impression make or break them.
I think that's another maybe underrated role that comes in, is just the concept of playtesting or tester, or somebody who manages play testers, like being able to reach out and just be like, hey, what do you think of this game? It's exactly akin to the conversation that we just had, where the first 20 minutes of this podcast, we were like, these are the things that we've experienced. But then we had to step back and be like, okay, for somebody coming in here, this is what this means.
Yeah,
and it's like player experience is so integral to somebody's enjoyment or to somebody receiving a message about a game. Because if they come in, and you have to consider your audience too, like, is somebody, do you want people to play this who have never played a game before? Yeah. Or do you want people to, you know, show off their skills, in which case you are assuming that they have played games before, kind of thing. So how many tropes and or archetypes and or just like well-known terms do you want to take advantage of when making your game, versus how much do you have to explain from ground zero? Like, if you're making a weird game where it's just like, yeah, I'm gonna try something like super off the wall, like like you have to kind of like, anybody playing this has to figure out what's going on, then like you have to think like, is my game going to be too obtuse? Like, how does a player feel good and want to play the rest of this game?
And some of that is also design as well.
Yep,
so like
100%.
Game design is its own, you know, practice, where it's like, you're the person coming up with the rules, how people interact with them, what makes the game fun, like what components are there to the game. I think other like really kind of not necessarily invisible, but like more invisible parts are like audio design. Like there's musician, but there's also audio design, and it's like sound effects and feedback, like player feedback. And like, you know, you want to have the little Zelda chime when you open the chest, like it feels good.
It does.
Another one I'm learning a lot about right now is narrative design, which is different from writing. Like there's somebody who writes the dialogue, but then there's a whole host of like practices where you're designing the narrative as a whole in more broad strokes. And you know, there's just a lot to it. Like each kind of thing you think that goes into making a game, there's probably like 3 to 4 subsets of that that happen in the industry, that some people, that's just their entire focus, their whole career is that one thing.
And even outside of making the game too, I still consider every time I talk about a team member who has contributed to a game, I always refer to them as a game developer.
Same.
It's pretty common that people will say developer and be referring to a programmer specifically, but I usually use the term widely. But another, game development role includes like marketing or socials or any of those kinds of things. And I think for a game jam, something that is a smaller project that you put together over the course of 5 days or something like that, I'd say a really relatable role there is just like putting up, like uploading the project to a page and making the page look cool and like talking to the team and or making like cool, like looking title on the game page so it looks appealing to download, and or writing language to describe the game or take screenshots, which will be the appropriate screenshots, not only for like pulling somebody into your game, but also like showing them what you will primarily be doing when you play this game. Like that's a whole another thing, which is, you know, like just your itch page design or your Steam page design or your store page design, like however you want to say it. Like that's also kind of like a subset of marketing. So much of that as well.
Yeah. All of that is to say that no matter how niche you think your interest is,
it's big.
It's big.
It's big. Yeah.
So you guys are actually mid game jam right now, as we're talking to you.
We are actually freshly finished as of last night.
That's
11:59 p.m. last night was the submission timeline. But we're, you know, we accept late submissions. It's not, we're here to learn new things and meet new people. Right. And that's not a competition for us.
Did you guys make a game for this one?
Kind of.
Yeah, kind of is the answer. So I did. I took the opportunity to make a bunch of
The theme of this game jam was narrative.
So I'm currently, like, I'm an artist predominantly, but I'm trying to teach myself programming. So I actually took the opportunity to make a library of different scripts I can use to, like, write cutscenes into a game project that I'm working on. So I kind of just focused on that, where I was programming a couple different scripts. And I'm going to, like, upload it as, like, yep, you can use these too if you want. I don't know how well they're written, but I know they work.
That's exciting. Yeah, I love, that's cool. Yeah, that's a cool, like, open source, just being helpful, making resources.
Yeah.
What is that process like? I think, because that often taps into the, like, left and right side of a brain, going from creating art to the programming side. Has that been tricky?
I do think it's kind of nice to, like, if you are interested in having a career in games, whatever your role you want to take on is, it is very helpful to kind of at least have a base understanding of how all the other roles work.
Yep.
Because as an artist, like, it is infinitely helpful for me to at least understand code structure, so I can sort of understand, like, what are my limitations of what I can get in this game? How are these things being implemented in the game? So I've, like, picked up a little bit of that, at least from work. And then it's just like, now trying to apply it myself because it sounds fun.
you gotta work all sides. It's just it's this information loop, and I think as the older we get, the older you get and the farther you get in your industry, understanding what you don't have to understand it in full depth and be like a master of everything, but having at least an understanding of what is on the receiving end of, like, oh, I could actually structure my files better or whatever is being handed over, I just think makes you a better person to work with, but also you can structure things, become more streamlined, and like processes become easier.
Yeah, your process really benefits from doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as you said, like, but being better to work with, like, everybody's people, so it's kind of like it that's another thing that can just, like, mount in the like mount on difficulties in completing a creative project with so many roles and so many moving parts. Like, There are many left fields in a field with in an industry with so many roles. So the more you know about other people, and the more you can, like, kind of meet in the middle on your process to make sure everything goes really well, there will be less things coming out of left field at you.
Sure. Right.
Yeah. Well, what I'm excited about is this episode we are hoping to drop right August 7th, which is right before your next game jam starts. And what is the theme of that one? It's crafting, which I'm really excited about. So many games are like, that's like been like the theme of like the past like few almost like years maybe. But
we,
like,
love
especially
farming sim.
But we love to just bash things together and make a new one. We love to breed our Pokemon, as weird as that sounds. Synthesis is just all we want to do anymore.
Yes.
Well, like Tears of the Kingdom is like crafting central, and so like I feel like I've just been like putting logs on fans on rocks and making cool robots like the past few weeks. So mm-hmm. I'm excited about crafting. Yeah. I've been trying to put feelers out there the past couple weeks to see if I can get like a Wacom team to do this game jam, but like no one has hit me up yet. I need to find a developer. That's like I need to find a coder. Like that's my hang up. So I mean, if anyone out there is listening to this, be on my team.
That's another thing too. If you're having trouble finding teams, the org team knows people really well and stuff. We're just like, hey, try this person. And we implemented a new thing in the Pig Squad Discord where we have forums for team forming now. So.
Oh, fabulous! Mm-hmm.
That's people really can nice. Post like, hey, I'm looking for a programmer, or hey, I am a programmer and I'm looking for a team. Mm-hmm. So I see a lot of people in there right now.
I was actually had a question that's a little bit bigger umbrella question regarding Pig Squad. It is a community space. It's a community forum. You guys have a Discord. I know you guys stream on Twitch all the time. Now we're back to having in-person events, and a lot of these events are hybrid. What were some of the difficult pieces to actually just getting Pig Squad off the ground and creating such a great space for the community? What are like the joys and the not so joyful things that you've experienced over these last years pulling this community together? Because it's, again, people are going to people, but
I think in a way I just really, really, really lucked out with what I was doing in my life and the people that came out at first. And I guess I've always wanted to be at least polite when like addressing everybody and organizing things, and I want to make sure things go right and that people have a good time and all those other kinds of things. So that was, of course, like a big like start to it. But then also early on in Pig Squad, I had met Jeffrey, who I started a nonprofit with to youth in underserved areas of Portland, how to make video games. And that was also a nonprofit association. And with that, I went through so much like co-founder training with Jeffrey. And he really just like went so hard on like youth safety and how mentors in that program can communicate correctly with not only youth, but like adults. And we were doing after school programs at academies and libraries and everything like that. So I think I just like just the timing of that was just so lucky for me as my personal development. And I think that really continued to like that, you know, went into me. And at the time I was kind of the only one doing anything with Pig Squad as a organizer. So I think that kind of infused like what it looked like for people to what those events became for other people.
Right.
And I think from there, it just kind of like continued where, you know, when we eventually formed a 501c3 nonprofit, like one of the people who really was pushing for that was a member of the community. It was Brian Wasitis, who is now working with the Oregon Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts, the OVLA.
Oh, cool.
And I believe he's he's now the president. But he was very much just like, yeah, like this is really cool. Like, let's get our house in order and make sure that this has like everything that we need, including like a code of conduct, and that, you know, legally we're in the right place. We have a nonprofit, and then everybody running the organization knows what that is and all those other kinds of things. So I think that just kind of like, you know, built out how Pig Squad was essentially just like celebrated as a safe and unique environment for people to create together. So I think that was like a really, really big part of it.
Yeah. Sure. And I'll say too, I think that like, that's sort of the maintenance that needs to happen with the community all the time is making sure we're like moderating, making sure we're on top of it, making sure that like when new people come in, they feel welcome. And when new people come in, they know the rules kind of thing. And I have to give a lot of credit to also just like the community in general makes that extremely easy. Like a lot of the times, like I think we have a very like undramatic track record, relatively speaking, with Pig Squad members and people who come to events.
Yeah, I mean, to very, very briefly answer your question, like the bad part of it is just calling somebody out on the code of conduct and sending them home and being like, sorry, you can't come back because you're not treating people correctly.
Right.
But other than that.
But that has happened so infrequently. Yeah. And I think that there are times when, like, you know, people are new to the community and they won't quite have the feel for it yet. And we'll have to like pull them aside and be like, hey, like, just heads up, like, maybe, you know, think about this behavior rather than this or anything like that. And people are very receptive to that and like kind about it. And I think even when anything like that comes up, you'll see sometimes if before one of the organizers can get to it, like a community member will be handling it themselves. Right. Like there's just a really great environment that is really supported by our community of like everyone's on the same page about like what the rules are here, what the vibe is here, how we keep it welcoming. And I feel very proud a lot of the times when that happens where it's like, yeah, people get it without even being on the organizing team.
Right,
you know?
Right. It is, and it is a, like a true testament, I think, to that framework that you built from the jump. Well, like, yeah, it, like you started out and you're like, oh, okay, no, hold on. Here's the boundaries. It is really great. And I think for people, through all of my work and work that I've done with different groups and organizations, people are always like, oh, well, I kind of want to start a group that does this or whatever. But that thought of starting a group and pulling people together can be really intimidating because all it takes is one person to like turn and then sour your experience. Yeah. And you're like, fine, forget it. I'm just going to keep it either A, this tiny core group, or I don't know. So it is, start with a code of conduct, create your framework, set expectations, and then go forth and be great.
And, you know, the code of conduct was really the reason that I came to Pig Squad in the first place. So it's like when you have those things, you'll attract the right people. I think we've heard in the past, like, of just like anecdotally people being concerned about enforcing or creating a code of conduct because it might push people away. But it's like, you're going to push away the right people to push away, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
absolutely.
The people who are going to leave when you tell them they have to be nice are not the people you want around.
It's that argument of like tolerating intolerant people. Like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Like, that's the exception.
At the beginning of every event we have here at the Experience Center, your other officers, volunteers, Dylan, Christy, and Merlin, shout out to them. They're great. They always remind people that there is a code of conduct and at the very beginning and say like, hey, if you feel uncomfortable, this is what you should do. And there's always like the anonymous like thing that you can fill out online to be like, hey, this happened type of a thing. It's the safety just seems to be like number one priority with this group, and I've always appreciated you guys for that.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, yeah, just from a logistical perspective, like, it has to happen. Like,
It makes it easier for us too.
You don't go out to a hostile environment. There's gonna be nothing there. You don't want to, no one wants to spend time there. I think I guess another thing that's really lucky for me at the time that I was starting to develop Pig Squad is that, you know, mental health just became more and more and more of a conversation with people in tech. And it's just like, like getting into a poor mental health situation driven by like an extracurricular activity that you're going out and trying to do. Like, what the heck is that? Like, no way. Like, don't do that.
Yeah. That makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah.
You think it'd be make sense to more people, but it doesn't.
But, that's right. Yeah.
Not always common. Not all sense is common.
Yeah. So Pig Squad is awesome. That's we know that. So Pig Squad was kind of like established.
Okay. So we agreed on that one. Okay.
Yes. Hands down. It's great. It's amazing.
10 out of 10. Would recommend.
Pig Squad is I don't want to say a stepping stone because like it is a huge pillar in like what you guys do, but it also branched out and you guys did Rose City Games. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is a good spot here to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about Rose City Games and like how that formed.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Shoo shoo.
This podcast is brought to you by the team at the Wacom Experience in Portland, Oregon. The Wacom Experience is equal parts showroom, creative space, and classroom. We're open to the public and are a great place to hang out, get some work done, or take your creativity to the next level. To stay up to date on what's happening at the Wacom Experience PDX, along with information on upcoming events and workshops, make sure to follow us on social media. Our link in bio can be found in the show notes.
The Whatcom Experience PDX is located at 1455 Northwest Irving Street in Portland, Oregon. If you're in the area, stop by and say hi.
We're back. So we were talking about Pig Squad, how that formed, why it's awesome. There's so many reasons. What that did is actually it branched off a bit and you guys formed Rose City Games. So you want to tell us a little bit about that and how that started?
Yeah, it's actually funny. Rose City Games was founded around the same time that Marlo started coming out to Pig Squad stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I founded Rose City Games with Corey, who also hangs out in Pig Squad. What happened with that is I was working with some friends on a game that they were making. They were working closely with Cryptid Network.
Christopher, the editor here, during our recording, the connection became a little unstable and the audio started to fade out a bit. So I'll interpret. Will was working with some folks from Cartoon Network and actually pitched an idea to create a Cartoon Network game jam. The game jam theme was centered around the show OKKO, Let's Be Heroes. Okay, Will, take it away.
And Cartoon Network wanted to do this interesting, like transmedia approach to the launch of an IP rather than just the launch of a show, where a game would come out alongside the show. And so the idea was a bunch of game developers came together, primarily in Portland, and they got together and everybody got a character from OKKO. They got a different hero from the show, which was not a show at the time. And they made a game based on that character's superpower. And there were like prizes. We negotiated that like a certain number of teams essentially got a cash prize that that equated to kind of like wages for the weekend because we were jamming over the course of a weekend. Whoa. And then the winner negotiated a contract with Cartoon Network to take their game jam game and take it from kind of prototype game jam form into a full release under Cartoon Network. So the budget and all that other kind of thing. Yeah. And so when negotiating this project and this like idea, I was just like, man, like, what is is this Pig Squad? Is that, but Pig Squad's a nonprofit, so that's kind of weird. Or like, is this me or whatever? But I was working with a lot with Corey at the time, and he was helping a lot with Pig Squad. I was just like, yeah, like I know that we could do this. Like, do you want to do it? And then that's kind of how we founded Rose City Games. We started a studio, which started out kind of handling interesting, weird games related projects such as the Cartoon Network Game Jam or like showcasing indie games at events for other companies or any of those kinds of things. But our goal was really to step by step get it to where we were making our own original games with original IP, owning our own IP and everything like that. And that's where we've been over the past couple of years. Now Rose City Games, we typically work with a team of just between, you know, anywhere in between like 14 and like 22 people kind of vibe with employees and contractors. And we typically work on multiple projects at the same time. You know, earlier we were kind of working on different contract projects at the same time. And now we're working on original games where like Corey's leading a team and I'm leading a team kind of thing. And as I had mentioned earlier, we released Floppy Nights pretty recently and we released Garden Story pretty recently, where Floppy Nights was technically the first game where we had like all the stakes. Like it was our game. We took it from start to finish. We had it on like Xbox Game Pass. And then Garden Story was the first game that we published, where another developer in Portland, we saw their work and we were just like, wow, like they want to make a full game out of this. And like, we have connections and we know how to actually release games. Like maybe they want us to help with them, like negotiate that we can get a budget going for the game and release it. So we released Garden Story and Marlo was the lead artist for Floppy Nights and everything like that. She'd done a ton of contracting work with us and a ton of employed work with us before moving to Megacrit and everything like that. So yeah, it's like the dream can happen once you, you know, you meet these people in Pig Squad and you get together and you're just like, yeah, let's start to organize this and like make a living out of it and everything like that. And that's what Rose City Games has been for, I believe, 8 years.
Yeah.
Pandemic makes the years kind of fly around, but I believe it's 8 years.
35 years. Yeah. It's, I love that realization of going through the game jam with the Cartoon Network and you're like, am I doing this? I am doing this work.
Yeah.
Is this work like this work? You're like, no, we're doing it. We're doing this work. Is there something that you wish you knew about starting a game studio that you had no idea? Is there like a piece of thing that you're like, damn it, I wish I would have known this when I started?
There's of course lots of little things. You have to just do stuff and make mistakes to find yourself in a good place. And you have to learn from those things. Like, and yeah, you just learn so much about yourself and like how much you need to like support yourself and other people, you know, coming from that angle of like community organizing, it just becomes a very different game with just like, yeah, like we're handling money now, we're handling people's livelihoods and stuff like that. And, you know, that becomes just something that you learn to manage and take very seriously. But otherwise, I don't know, like just thinking about just like kind of the basics. I mean, based on a lot of the things that I had done with like organizing projects and game jams and events and all these other kinds of things, like I felt really, really good about like meeting people and like pitching projects and everything like that. We, you know, invested in having some kind of like business coaching and all those kinds of things, which was very, very valuable. But then also Corey had done a lot of work before in the music industry and thinking about his understanding of like certain like business company structures and like how to stay on top of the organization around money and all that other kind of thing. It was really nice because we weren't, you know, experts at these things, but we came in with a lot and it was like, I do think it like shortcutted a lot of mistakes
sure.
that would have really made. So that was like really nice. And I think if anything, a more direct answer to your question around just like, what do you wish you knew before? It's almost like I had the affordances to like learn that stuff with prior experiences before jumping in with a game studio. And it's almost as if like, you know, quote unquote, patience paid off in that way too.
Sure,
where it's just like,
when
I was starting Pig Squad, I always wanted to make games, you know, I didn't say like, well, I'm going to jump in and make games right now, like, and make a profession out of that. It was more that I was like, I'm good at this thing. I'm going to go with it. Like, I'm going to make it work. But the right opportunity to make games and start a studio didn't come along until it came along.
You were ready for it at that point.
Right.
I think one kind of interesting tidbit that I can pull from that, that's maybe less like you wish you knew this before, but more like good advice for people who are thinking about starting a studio is like, don't anticipate or plan around your studio making a hit. Like that, you know,
excellent advice.
Like you could say that comes with time, but sometimes that's not even true. It's just kind of like, if it happens, it's great. But like, there are so many games and so many studios that like, it's the exception and not the rule to like have a really financially blow up successful game.
Right.
So I think it's like, you have to approach it. Like if you're starting a studio tomorrow, you just have to think about it in terms of sustainability rather than I'm going to get rich off of this game. You know?
And I think that's of course disheartening advice, but I think one thing that you can really, really do to mitigate that is something that Corey and I were both good at the beginning. And this is something that everybody should know, is like, at least one person on your team should feel very, very comfortable, like talking to new people and meeting new people and going to conventions and just making relationships. Cause like, just like with Pig Squad, you never know who you're going to talk to and have a weird conversation with one night at an art code night. And then 3 years later, you are like, oh, like I know this person. I want to make a game jam game with them. And it ends up being the thing you've been the most proud of ever.
Yeah.
Like many people you meet at the very beginning where you're just like, I'm going to hire this person for just like 2 weeks worth of work. And then 3 years later, you're just like, man, I need this kind of work done. Oh yeah, they were really good to work with. And we, you know, we parted ways very, very amicably because it was just a quick thing. Like, I'm going to hit that person up. And then they become your favorite employee. Mm-hmm. That stuff happens. You have to be meeting people and
be nice.
Yeah. And be nice. And yeah, it's just at the end of the day, it's just all people. And like, I think that's one thing I like so much about Pig Squad and how my relationships in Pig Squad led to Rose City Games is that just like, it's all people, and it's mm-hmm. fun to talk to people. People make all the things that we love. Go on that angle. It's a good way to approach things.
It's great that like it just started with you and Corey, but you were saying like you then got the opportunity to work with like 15 to 20 people at Rose City Games, and like that's that networking side of things that you're just talking about, mm-hmm. which is really cool. What was it like releasing your first game with Rose City Games?
I think that there's not quite an experience that I can, you know, relate to releasing a game. It's just a very specific, like, I'm thinking about the minute that you press launch, right? On the page.
Right.
It's like bizarre because
it is surreal.
Feels like,
every time it's surreal.
It feels like this very surreal feeling, and like that there should be like 80 people in a room and they all cheer and clap like the moon landing. But it's you at your computer pressing a button.
Well, especially for the pandemic, that's how it happened during the pandemic. It's so strange.
The game I had released previously, Dicey Dungeons, like I was the only person on the core team that lived in Oregon. Like we had people internationally, and people like a couple people lived in the States, but not like anywhere near me. And it was just like a Discord message of I press the button, and we're all just like. Cool. Like, I feel all this excitement, but like it's so bizarre.
The photos that we photoshopped together of us all holding our switches up with Dicey Dungeons on it a week later was pretty cute. But it was
the same for Floppy Nights too, just because of you know the pandemic and we were all working remotely. It's just like, and there are teams that just work remotely. Like I work remotely with my team now. At work, and it's just like you've given birth to something, but you don't see it, and you're in a room alone.
I think the one thing that's very exciting, though, is that like people streaming it and people being able to watch people play it is very, very rewarding. And I think that's almost like
I think that's the celebration.
It's kind of like there's kind of two sides of it for me. Like I know that crunch is something that we very, very much avoid in Rose City Games, and we definitely do not have it on any sort of close scale to something like a what is reported in AAA games. Like we'll probably do like, I don't know, 2 to 3 late nights a couple weeks before the release. And like, of course, the night before the release, everybody's like weirded out and working, even though we tell them to go. Yeah, they're just nervous about what's going to happen. And everybody's working, even though we tell them to go home and like all that other kind of thing. But like, I don't know. I love those nights too. Like, it's just that game jam vibe. Like, I love those nights of like everybody's play testing and everybody's like almost laughing at the frustration of like a certain bug that's like tripping somebody up. Yeah. And I know that that's different for everybody. And again, I do not approve of crunch, but like, I think that that is kind of like a something that really like brings me into it. And then afterwards, the idea of everybody watching collectively, like people mm-hmm. play and enjoy the game, are two like very, people don't think about that, but those are two very, very celebrated and just like awesome moments when you launch a game. And I think that that's something that we didn't quite expect when we released World Next Door, and we weren't like on top of that. And we, you know, streamers were a big thing at the time, but we didn't lean into it as hard, I think. Mm-hmm. And then with Floppy Nights, we really did lean into it. And it doesn't only kind of help out with marketing and awareness of the game, but it also is just like a massive morale boost for everybody. And it's worth it, too. It's very, very fun to explore that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We didn't really get into like the art style of the games, but the art is amazing, Marlo. And I love your style so much. Your color choices are just amazing. And like, I don't know, I almost feel like some of your style like influenced mine for a little while because like have this like kind of like pastel-y brush that you use in Photoshop. Yeah. I think Photoshop mainly.
Yeah.
That is just so good. It's got such a good like. Edge got that texture
tooth.
To it.
Yeah.
It's got that tooth. Exactly. Exactly. And I love it so much. Yeah. So
I did have a question about art though.
Yeah.
And so I do think I do think, Christopher, yes, your style, I think, has been... You, because we work with so many artists, I think anytime we work with another person, there's like baby things, like small techniques or color palettes or stuff
that's
that
true for every artist.
You get
in, really?
Yeah, you get inspired and you're like, oh yeah, this is rad.
I've been inspired by Marlo for sure.
The Marlo Dobie palette. We all gotta do it.
I know.
And the Marlo
Dobie so
brushes.
Good.
Gotta do it all.
100%. You do have a really distinctive style. For me, again, not being a super hardcore gamer, I have like, I don't know, I'd say like mid-level gaming experience growing up, not counting Burger Time. I put in a lot of hours with Burger Time.
Oh, yeah.
As someone that has worked, you worked for Rose City Games and now you are where you are, what are some of the, would you have advice for people getting into the game industry as an artist?
Yeah. Like, besides the obvious that we talked about with like doing game jams is a really wonderful way to kind of get into it and meeting people. I really think it is just about like making the kind of art you want to see in games. So I think that like, you know, don't feel like you're pressured to make art in like a video gamey style at all.
Sure.
And I think a lot of the times, like having something that's like super unique can be a huge boon for your game. So for something like Floppy Knights or something like Dicey Dungeons, like a roguelike and a tactics game, like there are not a lot of games that look like those two games in that genre. Like it kind of helps it stand out a bit, where it's like, oh yeah, it's this really unique, bright, fun, colorful art style, but it's like in a genre that's surrounded by like grimdark fantasy. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that that's where a lot of interesting stuff happens. And I think it's kind of just like, you know, to not sound too cheesy, like stay pretty true to what you like to make. And
I would say looking at like a portfolio after being able to see that stuff and say like, ooh, Rose City Games constantly has an interesting limitation where there's so many artists that we would love to work with, but it's difficult to have them come in and do art because they're so unfamiliar with games or making art for games.
And that's where sort of like game jams come in.
So I would say, if like the way that Marlo says, like, you don't have to make your art look gamey, but that's kind of where the game jams come in, right? Like you have to have something, you have to have some sort of understanding of like how to art direct for a game, and it, and it isn't always surrounding playing games. Like, what a low stakes way to like build a portfolio around around showing your understanding of games and stuff like that, so that you know, like your art style, if somebody wants to pick up on it, they can pick up on it like that. It's because knowing a little bit about the industry, and as Marlo said earlier, like being considerate of other people's roles on a team is like, it's just a efficiency multiplier.
Yeah, I'd say that like going into Pig Squad for the first time, I didn't even know what a PNG sequence was. But then like through doing game jams and like working with other developers and asking like, oh, how can I give you this art that you can put it in the game, and learning those different ways and different pipelines, that's like, that's what's going to unlock it all for you.
I also learned that. I was
exactly.
I was like, someone said, we need the sprite sheet for this character. I was like,
and you're like, a sprite what?
Oh, you're thirsty? Okay.
Can I ask Marlo a variant of your last question?
Yes.
Oh, taking the job.
So
take it away.
I just think this is important because it happens so often.
What's that?
A lot of people in the community approach Marlo, not because of Pixwad, or not just because of Pixwad, but also because of the games that she's worked on for portfolio reviews.
Yeah.
What would you say are for game jobs? What would you say are...
Hey, it's Christopher, the editor, here again. A little audio blip. The question was, what's the most common piece of advice you give to people for their portfolios? Okay, Marlo, tell us what it is.
Just good portfolio advice in general is only show stuff that you want to do. Like, if you really hate doing background art, do not put background art in your portfolio, because people will hire you for that and you'll have a miserable time. And then you'll become the background art person that only gets hired for background art. And you're like, but all I wanted to do was draw buttons.
Yeah. Somehow Marlo became like deck builder queen.
Yeah, right.
But she's okay with that. Like, that's fine.
All the jam games are always deck builders or dress up games or something.
Yeah, Dicey Dungeons was, is a deck themed game. So is Floppy Knights.
Yeah.
And then she got hired by a studio that is known for making a deck builder. It's just like, okay.
But you know what? I don't mind that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd see that. And I'd say, I think this isn't also just general portfolio advice, but if you're someone that likes to work in multiple styles, like, go for it. If you're someone that wants to be hired to kind of style match, then show off that you can do a bunch of different styles.
For me, as somebody who hires people, like, style matching is so helpful.
Yeah, because you can't always be the like art director or lead artist.
Right.
But if it's important to you to only be working in your style, then only show that in your portfolio. Mm-hmm. It's just really about like showing off exactly what you want to be hired to do and not any extracurricular stuff, because that's a pitfall.
I feel like I hear that advice across multiple industries because you do. It's the like, not that it's a guarantee, but it's very close of like, if you show that one project or piece of work that you were like, I did this, but whatever, wasn't jazzed on it, that's going to become your thing.
And it's like brutal for games too, because games take multiple years to make. So it's like, you want to be doing that for 2 to 3 years? Like,
that might be actually a really great segue into my next question. Is what is the lifetime, I guess the lifespan of a game, like concept to execution to playable game that's out on a platform, what does that journey look like, and what is there an average length of time that games take? I don't know.
Very funny anecdote. An article came out the other day explaining that GTA 6, Grand Theft Auto 6, has been in development since halfway through development Grand Theft Auto 5.
And, so like 50 years,
and
essentially,
and was only really announced. Yeah. Like Grand Theft Auto 6 was only really announced over the last couple of months. I don't know when anything official came out, but I do know that it was first announced through a leak that somebody about it without it being an official announcement. So that's wild, thinking about how this game started that many years ago with the prequel that.
Yeah.
Is still being worked on, may not have even intended to be announced by now, and does still not have a release date on it. So who knows how much longer it's going
to
be in production.
But that's not to say that every game takes 50 years.
No, I'm just saying that's just a very funny anecdote.
But maybe
evaluate the current situation.
Sure.
I just want to know when
we're going to get news about Silk Song.
Just talking about how long
games take, but anyway,
there's a lot of things that influence that, and I think that it depends on how many people you have on your team and what the scope of the project is. So something like GTA 6, of course, is going to take ages because it's like the game that does everything.
Because the gamers will call in death threats if you don't do a good job,
or they'll steal your car. But then, there's like smaller games that are made by solo developers that can be,
6 months. Or 5 years.
I think in my experience, at least with the project I've worked on, it's like 2 to 3 years generally is like for the scope of games that I've worked on. And that's kind of felt like the right amount of time.
In my experience, I would say if you're in a team under 20 people, if you can find something that feels fun to do in a game and you want to turn it into a game, try to spend 2 to 3 years on it and try to stick to that. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a pretty solid way to think about like how you're going to fund this project and get all these people to stay on the project, whether it's 20 people or 5 people or 1 person. I think it's realistic to think about like that in terms of like how far you go with a game before there's too much game.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to tangent
adding features into a game
tangent yourself into a game that isn't fun because it's unfocused. There's a lot of things to think about with that.
And I think that scope happens a lot when you just like get practiced at it. You kind of get a vibe for like, how much can we pull off in a few years? Mm-hmm. Like,
Right.
How many systems can we pull off in a few years? Like, you start to get a feel for that. And if you're like newer and you're trying to estimate your time, just like guess how long you think it'll take you and multiply it times three, because that's probably what it'll be.
It's so, yeah, that's the best way to start.
Yeah.
Gotta start somewhere.
I think that's like a good advice for like game jams too, not to keep going back to game jams.
But
just
think about like the game that you want to make and cut it in half and then cut it in half again. Because like that's the game you will probably make.
A term that we use a lot is minimum viable product. And that's like, what's the minimum thing that you could ship and like release
and it's a game
and it's a game and it's good and then that's what you work towards, and then, you know, God willing, you have extra time, that's when you add anything on that you kind of have on your wish list,
which also celebrates you know what your game should be, which is like kind of like getting its message across at a base. It's just like it should be fun at a base, it should be emotional at a base. Like, you have to, like, if you could do that with your minimum viable product, then you're
in
pretty
a good
successful
spot. Don't make an MMO for your first game.
No, don't pitch me your MMO, because all the fun of it.
Out the gate, I'm going to laugh at you. So we spoke about kind of what you guys have done, where you've been, when is GTA 6 coming out, all of these things, mysteries of the world. What is next for Rose City Games? What do you guys have in the hopper? Can you even talk about it? It's a super secret.
We can't talk about everything, but we're working on a virtual reality project right now that we're hoping to announce in the very near future. So that'll be really cool. It's the first time that we've done a kind of like full on virtual reality release, and it's also original. So that's really nice. I am also leading a different project that we are kind of in the prototyping and demoing stage, getting feedback on it and kind of like figuring things out for another experience that is a little bit more like our existing titles. Very cool. A little bit very similar to something that if somebody sees a Rose City Games game and says, hey, cool art and hey, cool music and I like these characters and all that kind of thing, they will probably think the same thing when looking at this game that we're working on now. So starting to kind of play test it with some friends in Pig Squad and just kind of like rounding out where our big jumping off point is for that. So that's what Rose City has in the future.
That's exciting. You mentioned VR, and we didn't talk about kind of the general state of video games that much. I know VR has been around for a long time. I feel like VR collectively is still not that it struggles to find its footing, but I feel like it hasn't really settled in a space. I think maybe just equity, people having headsets, accessibility, et cetera, makes that slightly difficult. What do you guys, is VR, do you feel like it just is going to continue to have a place in the gaming realm in the future? And then what are some other things that you see happening in the gaming industry for the future?
Just to address VR really specifically.
Hey, everyone. So we went down a rabbit hole here for like at least 20 minutes. I'm going to post this part of the conversation in our Discord for anyone who wants to know more about our thoughts on the future of VR. Okay, back to the show. So to end the podcast, we always ask the name of our podcast is Why Do You Create?
That's good.
It's good.
Do you want to go first or should I?
I could go. I don't know. I think I just got all these little guys dancing around my head. I gotta get them out there. Would you say that's an accurate answer for me to say?
I think that's an accurate answer for you. And I think mine is a bit more of a flowery version of exactly that, where it's just like, it's kind of about like communication. Mm-hmm. For me, it's really a compulsion, first of all. Like, absolutely have to be like, being productively making something is just a part of me
too.
But it's also just communication. I think I'm really interested in storytelling, and I'm really inspired to tell stories, but like through creating something and having someone experience it. Mm-hmm. So for me, a lot of the times that's video games, and it's that desire to like make something that people can experience and you can see them experience it. And, you know, take away whatever they take away from that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would say the same thing. I think I've always wanted to make things. I've always been really interested in drawing and like making characters and making up stories about characters and thinking about different worlds and like delivering lore. Like that's a really cool thing that happens in games and in a way that like the player can discover lore and all those other kinds of things. So yeah, I feel like I'm at my funnest when I'm like seeing, you know, there's kind of like different stories being told and, you know, having twist endings delivered to you, having a good moment where you feel good pulling off a combo in a game or anything like that. It's just like all those moments that come together to make kind of like, I think it's called like type two fun, where it's just like you look back on experiences very, very fondly, and think about the good time that you had while also like having type one fun, which is like fun in the moment and mm-hmm. having a good time. And I think that's why, you know, I really like making memories thing. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's why I really value community as well. And making community is because it's really, really great to have that collective memory and experience with other people to create that trust and create like a future moving forward together.
It is, in fact, the friends you made along the way.
It's
all the little guys up here in the brain. Yeah.
That was, both those answers were beautiful, and I'm glad you expanded on more than just the little guys in your head, because that was nice. Type 2 fun. I haven't heard that in a while.
We do have a lot of little guys in our heads.
Yeah.
Household.
It's an active
in your house. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a
thing. We have so many little guys. There's like a couple shelves with little guy figurines. I got a lot of little guys on my desk.
Hank's a little guy. Oh,
Hank's a little guy.
I saw the little guy like climbing the cat tree at one point.
He was being bad when you were off.
I had to keep an eye on him to make sure he didn't knock the Steam Deck over.
He was trying. He was getting sassy. He needed his camera time, so.
Yeah, the Dave the Diver machine almost hit the ground there.
Oh, that's a real good Dave the Diver machine. Oh man, gotta get a Steam Deck just for Dave the Diver. That's great. Yeah, well, thank you both. If people wanted to learn more about Pig Squad, Roasted Games, or either of you, where would they go?
Well, you know, social media is a bit of a whoopsie right now. So you can find me on whatever your social media platform of choice is at my name, Marlo Doby. I'm not really on Twitter or X or whatever it's called now, but I'm on anything else.
Twix. Oh, I love Twix.
Also, my website's my name too, marlodoby.com. It's awesome. An easy place to go.
Mm-hmm. And I am found at either pigsquad.com. Or roastedygames.com. And I also have social media channels, whatever. Just find me. I have a beard in my photo. And I'm probably posting about a lot of little guys and or little guy related things.
We never mentioned it, I think, on the podcast today, but Pig Squad does have a Discord as well.
Yep.
Or actually we did, but we never like shouted it out. Like definitely join the Pig Squad Discord.
Discord.gg/pigsquad.
Yep.
Yeah, that.
It's a great place to get started.
But also we have, you know, all of our game jams have like registration pages that explain how to get involved. We have a lot of stuff on our website that can help you understand what's going on. There's lots of photos on our website if you just want to see like what it looks like to come out in person and like be with other people and see what people are doing. Also, you could probably generate a great old 3D scan of the entire Wacom space by looking 100%. At those photos.
Yeah,
probably could.
Yeah, with all that stuff. And then Roast City Games, all of our cool games are available on roastedygames.com, Floppy Knight's Garden Story and The World Next Door, in addition to socials there as well.
Amazing. That was a long list, but I asked for a long list. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
We didn't even mention our personal itch pages where we have like 20 personal game jam games each.
You send me those. I'll drop them in our show notes. We do also have within our link in bio for the Experience Center, I think I have a dedicated link off to Pig Squad. I don't have one to your Discord, but I have one to the Pig Squad website. But 100% join that Discord if you want to get into games. Or if you're just tangentially interested in video games, I say join it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to lurk.
Yeah. We also have, we recently, Marlo made a giant like how to game jam
Love
guide
it.
Too. Yes. So like,
we've been sharing that around the Discord.
That's around too.
Yeah.
Well, thanks guys.
Well, thank you both.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Good to see you.
Yeah. It's good to see you up. As well.
We're all color coordinated. We discussed before the call. You have to know at home.
A plus.
Yeah. Good for the listeners. We're all color coordinated.
So spring.
Mm-hmm. We look great.
We do. We really do. Always.
We do.
We do.
And it's a vibe. We'll fade out from the we look great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to our show. Why We Create is produced by the Wacom Experience Center in Portland, Oregon. I do the editing, Megan writes our show notes, and our music is produced by Forest Pond. If you would like more creative content, you can follow us on all the social media platforms, including Twitch. We also have a Discord channel where you can get insider info into the podcast, share your artwork, and stay up to date on everything we are doing. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next time.